Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Well, well, another episode sponsored by our Ghostbed. Go to ghostbed.com, take their online mattress quiz, get your personalized recommendation from the Ghostbed collection. And for a limited time, listeners can take an extra 25% off. Ghostbed.com/Norton. Use the promo code Norton at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/Norton. Promo code Norton. Now you either look cute or I will put you out on the street. Oh. Look, Taffy and I are coming to a city near you. Aren't we, Taff? We're coming to Asheville, Charlotte, Duluth. Lick my chin. Columbia, Fargo, lick my chin, look like you're happy here. Bakersfield, San Diego, lick my ear. Rochester, Denver, lick me, be cute. Batavia, Portland, Eugene, Bend, Oregon, Huntington, Newton, look up for Newton, look up for Newton. Bangor, Maine, Foxwoods, and then Wilbur. I'm doing December the 20th, I'm doing the Wilbur Theater. Kiss my neck, look like you love me. Look like you love me, or I'm going to put you out. There you go. Oh, we're going to cut this together, Mike. Oh, the dog loves me. JimNorton.com.
Jim Norton can't save you. Jim Norton is a train wreck. Jim can't help you solve your own problems. Jim is the
Josh, thank you. Not only thank you for coming, but you're the first guest I want to see in podcast history to actually bring beverages. This was very nice. You brought us some pure green vegetable and fruit juices, which was very nice. You came with gifts, so thank you.
You know, I do my best.
Are you a healthy person?
I try to be, but I don't know if I'm that healthy. Like I'm terrified. Okay, so I'm terrified of needles, so I very rarely get blood work done. So I just operate on the belief that I'm healthy.
You want to, you know, if I'm not, if you're not tipping forward and just smashing your face, you're healthy.
Yeah, because I'm like, okay, I'm going to drink the juices. I'm even going to do, I don't do it as often as I should because it does have a lot of benefits. But you know the cryotherapy thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I've done it before. I really enjoyed it. And then it was just about getting back over there. And I never made the time to like make it a regular thing. But it's like I work out even though I don't work out as hard as I could. And then I try to eat well, even though sometimes I know I'm not eating that well. So overall, I think that I'm healthy. And because I get the blood work done once every like 6 years and it comes back normal, then I'm like, all right, I'm at least normal.
You're not dying.
Yeah. And healthy and normal are also different. So I'm already disappointed a lot of the times I do blood work because it will be like, oh, everything came back normal. It didn't come back excellent.
Right.
Like, I had a buddy who apparently his doctor told him after his checkup, after his blood work, that he had the cleanest blood he had ever seen. And that's what you want. You want, like,
yeah,
wow, your blood doesn't have any plastic in it.
Yes, you know want what I mean? It is funny to want a compliment from a doctor. What did my, I think I got told once that I had healthy gums by my dentist. He's like, you have really healthy gums. And I was like, wait, what I have what? Like, I just wanted to hear him say it again. So
yeah,
he had to repeat
yeah.
the compliment, I have healthy gums. It made me feel great.
Yeah, it's like when the people you owe student loans have to say they're paid.
Oh, you want to hear it twice.
It's like, yeah. Because I remember when I was paying my student loans, I think I did the opposite of what they say you should do. I think I tried to take care of the biggest one first. Like, just bad financial. Like, there was one that was like $2,000, but I was like, let's take care of the one that's 24 first as someone that doesn't have 24. And so then I finally got that one paid off. Mind you, I still owe tons of money in student loans, but that one was paid off, and I paid it off over the phone to make sure that they were saying what I, because this is what they do. This is like what honestly causes like shootings, is that they will take your call on the phone. You will, like a pizza delivery, read out your credit card number or your yeah. debit card number, make the payment there, confirm that they received the payment on the phone. But if it's past 5 o'clock, supposedly in any time zone, the next day's interest accrues, which is usually like 5 cents. Right?
So that you're going to get charged interest regardless of when you call it in.
No, if you call it in by a certain time, you won't get charged interest. But I called it in. One time I called it in forgetting that I'm on central time according to my loan. And so I called like Eastern time. So it was already like 5 o'clock. Central
time, yep.
And so the next day's interest had accrued. So then I'm calling specifically because I'm making the last payment, right? I'm like calling so that they can hear me say, I want to pay the remaining yes. balance. And it's recorded because they're like, this call's being recorded.
Yes.
So it would be recorded that I'm paying the remaining balance. It'd be recorded my credit card number. It'd be recorded them saying, you're good. And so then I do the whole transaction. And then I'm like, so what do I owe? And they were like, 5 cents. And I was like, what? And they were like, oh, yeah, you actually called at like 5:02 our time. So like it's
a matter of principle. It's like it's only 5 cents, but it's like getting charged for a bag. I had a bag rip once when I was leaving Best Buy. Mm-hmm. It really ripped like at the kiosk when I was walking away, and they recharged me for another bag. And it's not the money. It's yeah. the idea, like, you dirtbags.
If they would just, because this is my thing. This is what gets me. And this is like why the nation is crumbling, is that like, There is a like a corporate overlord of a system that like makes this thing suck for us, and you know, you kill yourself just to get an extra $100 just yeah. to give it to them to owe them $20 more, right? Yeah. All that being said, if they would just say, oh, actually you called after 5 o'clock, so the next day's interest accrues and we're the devil,
yeah.
that would you would then be like, all right, y'all get it.
Yeah.
But because then the guy gets ornery with me where he's like, well, it's not our fault that you called after 5 p.m. And I'm just like, I'm not going to argue with you over a nickel, but this is why people hate you.
Yes.
And this is why people hate you as someone who makes $60,000 at this job.
Right.
Because even though you're just a cog in the machine, you still are like crappy about it.
And you defend the machine.
You defend the machine.
You defend the machine, and you think the machine is legit, and people who complain about the machine, you take it personally. Like, yeah,
yeah,
I know what
yeah.
you mean.
It's like it's one thing to work. Everyone that, like, we live in a system where everybody needs a job. So everyone's going to have to get a job. So some people are going to end up working places they don't fully agree with. I'm sure there are vegans working at McDonald's, right? Yeah. That being said,
I hope so.
If you, yeah, not only, this is the thing about, if you're vegan and you work at McDonald's, you're probably like almost okay with it because you know this meat is murdering people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're almost like, this oh, good, yes. Would you like a double?
Yeah.
Because you're like, these are the murderous animals That's killing funny. Innocent animals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my thing is the fact that there are people that work at like a payday loan office or a student loan office that are also like, well, it's your responsibility to pay. It's like the fact that that internet comment is also a person that works there.
That's right.
Is what bothers me.
And they've been in your shoes before. I want to ask you before I forget too about the needles, because I'm always fascinated, because I don't like them either, but
yeah.
It's not a phobia for me. Is it something you've had your whole life? Because I got something called PRP
mm-hmm.
done. I got electric shocks on my penis. I did that because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm older, so I had a lot of self-abuse. So just to give it some more life. And they do that by shocking it, which sends blood to it, which heals. And I got PRP blood injected into it. So they take a needle, and I got like 5 needles, like 2 in the head of my dick and 2 in the shaft, and then 1 in the base of the dick. Mm. And I don't really love needles, but it helped, actually. I think it did help.
And how in what way did it help?
Like it just gets more blood. And we're looking right now, you guys can't see it. We're looking at the worst high school graphic, like the one that you would see in health class. It just sends more blood to you.
And so, and that that makes you like have stronger erections.
Yeah, and it's just like it's like when they do the micro tears from doing like they wand you with this thing. It's uncomfortable, but it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Those little teeny micro tears, your body sends blood to heal them, and that kind of like it just keeps things moving. It's almost like if you clean out like a valve to your heart or whatever.
Oh,
it just sends the funnel is a little more open, I think.
And when did you do this?
I've done it a couple times. It's been a few years, but the one time I almost passed out from the needle. Like the needle was so bad, I almost threw up. I'm like, I have to get. They were filming it. I was doing some awful reality, some reality show pilot, and they were shooting it. And the woman got like some like weird vaginal steaming, and I wound up doing it where I got this done on camera
for a pilot. Like
for a pilot, yeah.
But. If I do it, the show has to be greenlit. Like we can't still be wondering.
That is a really good point. I got a needle in my dick for a treatment. Yeah, idiot, for an elevator pitch.
So my thing is what I don't like. I've had it almost my entire life because I had what I can only call a botched drawing when I was a little kid. And there was basically this it still makes me queasy to talk about it, even though I'm better with needles now than I was then. I was always scared of them. And then finally, there was this nurse who like, maybe I was her third ever, I have no idea, but she literally had someone watching over her. Oh. And I was almost like, I'm like 6'8", I don't remember how, I'm young, but even I was like, why does the nurse need a nurse?
Right.
and then sure enough, she does the draw, but then whatever she did wrong, I just feel something in my arm. Blood is shooting up, and she's like dropped the needle, and like
she panicked.
And then she panicked, and then they had to do it again, but now they have to do it to me while I'm freaked out. So the nurse is like actually applying pressure and holding down my arm and everything, like really trying to get me to not hurt myself now.
Yeah.
And that just never left me.
It's traumatic. Yeah. Something like that. I don't have that. But nobody likes them. But the phobia of them I'm always interested in. And you're so interesting to me because I used to see you at the Cellar all the time, and you're always doing new material. Always.
Oh yeah. Thanks.
And you're very comfortable on like, which is why you're able to put out so much. Is like, it's fun to watch you because you're very very. Is it a confidence thing or is it just your natural? Because I watch you. And I'm like, this guy is just legitimately comfortable on stage. And that's a big thing to be for a stand-up.
I mean, I think most of it is that this is stand-up was the first real way I felt comfortable communicating with people. Because, like, interpersonally, I wasn't great.
Yeah.
And even though I made friends in college and I've made friends throughout my life, I think that it more comes from shared interest and like trying to be open than it does from real like confidence or charisma. I think that it was mostly with stand up. It was like, oh, this is the first time I get to just say my thought in the way that I think it. And it is funny. So it elicits the right response.
Right.
And it becomes like an upward spiral almost, because I'm like, oh, then this is how I should be communicating with people one-on-one.
Right.
Not in bits, but just in like, let me just say what I'm trying to say as quickly as I'm trying to say it.
Does it come from growing up online too? Because younger, like growing up online, people see so much interaction on a screen, and then in person, it's a little different. Is that part of what it was, or are you just kind of nervous around people?
I was nervous around people, but I was chronically online from like a young age. Basically, as soon as my family got a computer, which if I remember this correctly, I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure my family's computer was because my mom worked at the library and the library was getting new computers. And so they were throwing out some old computers and we got one of the old computers. And that was all I needed though, like a mild connection and like some time alone as well. Cause I was like, I wasn't like a latchkey kid or anything, but I was left alone starting maybe my freshman year of high school. I'd get dropped off at home and I was like trusted to be by myself and everything. And so from then on, especially, like I had at least 2 hours, hour and a half to 2 hours that were just like mine on the computer. And so I would just like whether it was message boards, forums, like all this stuff like that. And I got quickly acquainted with like communicating online versus.
Were you a troll? Were you a nicer guy online or were you nastier online?
I don't remember ever being like properly nasty. I think I could get nasty if someone got nasty with me quicker because you are behind a keyboard.
Yeah.
And because I was like bullied a good amount that I.
Growing up?
Yeah. That I never really found that footing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think that for the most part, what I enjoyed about being online was the randomness of it. And that's still what I like about it.
Why were you bullied?
Some of it was me being like weird, and some of it was like race. You know what I mean? Like some of it was just growing up in the South where I was. Okay. And then some of it was like, I was also weird on top of that. Like yeah. I think that what was probably very, I'm putting myself in their shoes now. I'm not being overly gracious. I'm just saying from in my mind, from their perspective, there were few enough black people around in certain circles that I was getting bullied in that someone probably had to wonder, like, do I not like black people or do I just not like people who hum show tunes?
Where's the combination? You know what
I mean? Yeah. So they're almost like, I'm gonna bully this kid. Like I'm like he about to get it. But also like, do I just not like that he's like kind of dancing guys and dolls to himself? Or is it cause he's black? Cause it was like, I think, you know, as you move forward in life and through Facebook, I kind of found the ones where I'm like, it was because I was black, and the ones that are like, oh, you don't like anything that's out of the ordinary.
you just didn't like the songs I was humming.
There were definitely, through Facebook, like Facebook is the probably more of a phenomenon than the growing up online thing, because now with Facebook, you can keep up with people differently. Mm. And so by keeping up with people differently, you can start to, without ever needing the high school reunion or needing to like reconcile with them, you can kind of see where they were coming from. Because now I look at the people, and like I said, there are a couple people where I'm like, no, it was just black. It was 100% black because of what you're posting now, how you're posting, right. What you say, the way you speak. And then there's some people where I'm like, oh, you were gay.
Yeah.
I had no idea. you were seeing me dancing by myself, and you were like, oh, I don't know what it is about that I like, but I'm gonna beat that down for a little bit until after college, and then I'm gonna do it too.
Then I'll explore a little bit in college. Yeah. So they would, because I got called, you know, believe me, I got called everything you can get called, but I was doing things that kind of merited those things, you know what I mean? I was blowing my friends. I certainly couldn't sue the guy for slander. And back then in the 70s, they could hit you and do what they wanted, you know.
Yeah,
it was a little
bit
of a different time.
Yeah, you could get away with more.
Oh, a lot more.
Yeah.
And was it physically bullying? Like, did they hit you, or was it just taunting, or was it both?
A little bit of both. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't like, I didn't have the like classic after school movie beatdown where it's like, all right, it's time, you know, like something's got to give. I had that in elementary school once, and my mom put me in karate, and it was just, it didn't last. It was like, not only was I not coordinated, I wasn't good. I didn't have the will. And then at a certain point, my mom was like, I think I'm just paying for him to get beat up now. Like, it's like, it's like, if you not, like there was definitely a moment with my mom where I can't remember what the incident was after they put me in karate, but my parents put me in karate and then something else happened. And then my mom didn't say anything. And so maybe I'm projecting here, but it almost feels like my mom wanted to be like, you didn't, you know, from class, like I think she was in her head, which is what makes sense as any parent. In your head, you're like, okay, I'm sending him to like bully beat up school, and he good enough at regular school,
sure.
So he should learn something at bully beat up school.
He'll excel.
So then, when bullies beat up and you get an F in bully beat up, it's kind of like, well, then why am I paying? You know what I mean? Like, it would be like paying for your kid's college, but they are a terrible artist.
So basically, you were a dropout of that.
Yeah. It's like, imagine paying for, like, you know, whatever, you know, like Berkeley or something like that. And then at the end, you're listening to the mixtape and you're like, ooh, this offbeat. Like, as the parent who paid for it, you've got to be like, I thought you'd be getting at least a banger in there or something. Like, because everyone is so, obviously, because it's like, it's a biological trick that you are like, like in all ways preferred to your child, and your child is special, and your child is like doing completely normal. I'd argue like, more than socially acceptable. It's like necessary so that people walk around with confidence and like the belief in themselves and everything. Yeah. But all that being said, it's like there comes a point, and it's usually when money gets involved, that even a parent is like, "Oh, I paid for you to suck at this." Like it yeah. Like money is the one thing you could literally sit. This was a thing that even happened with me at school. It's like you could sit down a parent of a bully and be like, "They're bullying this kid. Your kid said it, the other kid said it, and the parents of the other kid said it." And someone will still be like, "There must be a misunderstanding." Not Charlie, right? But if you send your kid to school and after $180,000 they can't paint, that's something you notice.
You notice it, you and you're pissed off, and they probably resent you for wasting their money.
Yeah, yeah. And so the bullying was like, and it also felt a little like, I've had so many different thoughts about this and like arguments back and forth with friends about it, but like maybe I'm of a certain mind about it because I made it out okay, but like some of the bullying, a very minute amount of the like, I am not advocating for anybody to be bullied.
Right.
I'm only talking about my old experiences that I'm over. Course. But like some of it was the character building thing that makes me like a normal like able to express myself, but also know what's too much as an adult. Because some of it was like, I'm gonna pick on you because you're different. I'm gonna pick on you because I'm insecure, whatever. And then some of it was like, stop, like yeah. stop, like why are you making that noise right now? You know what I mean? And it's like that third thing is like, it's not worth bullying someone over, but like, having someone point it out is like so completely necessary to be a well-adjusted individual.
There are times where they show you things. I 100%. I'm like, I'm not funny because I got treated nice by other kids. Like,
yeah, that, yeah,
if,
yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I never would have been funny if they just liked me or if I didn't blink so much. Like, it's all this weird
yeah.
shit that makes kids taunt you that you're like, I better learn how to incorporate this and use it as a weapon or I'm in trouble.
And like, I didn't know, like, not to be too like Disney Channel about it, but it's like, I didn't know that I was weird enough to be unique until I was bullied. So it's not fair that the happenstance around that thing was bullying, but something was going to happen outside of my mom's approval to let me know that I was like weird enough to be unique enough to do other things.
You're a very a prolific thinker too. Like I like you put out more material than most people. It's crazy the amount of material you put out, and it's good. Like the clips are really funny and the material is funny. It's not like you're just talking. You're actually doing legit material. How much are you putting out, and is that kind of a goal that you have forever, or do you just get sick of saying things quickly?
So it's a lot of things at once. One, it's like I started it as a sort of like challenge to be accountable to what I mean. There was no base there when I started or anything. There was no group of people waiting for it or looking for it. There was in theory, like there was like in my mind that people would enjoy that sort of thing. But during the writer's strike especially, I've always been someone that wrote a lot, but because I wasn't putting it out, people would notice it, but they notice it in passing. They'd be like, "Oh yeah, what ever happened to that bit that you used to?" I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I don't do it anymore."
Dropped it.
And then like, then people would be like, "Oh, are you saving it for a special?" Like once I had done Tonight Show and Conan and stuff like that, people would be like, are you trying to do a special with her or something like that? And I'd be like, "No, not really. I think I'm just like, I think I look at bits the way that you would look at food. And there's like a cooking process, and then there's like when it's perfectly ready, then there's the time to eat it, then there's like letting it sit out and it's like cold but still good maybe, then it's like spoiled, then it's like trash." And I
yes.
think that there's something to be said for like overcooking something. Like I've watched specials of people I really admire and respect and saw the process of them doing that bit as they were running it
yeah.
to the process of it being in the special. And I was kind of like, oh, not only obviously some things are going to be better live than they are
sure.
on tape, but also I think you like over tagged it and overthought it now.
Too much, yeah.
And it's like, rather than get into that way, I think what, like, my thought was like, what if I could like have, you know, like dinner ready every week? And then see what that looked like and what that felt like to do, because I was always doing it in like passing, but I was never doing it with purpose.
Yeah.
And so that part of it is that. Also, the other part of it is that I do write to things and have a lot of thoughts about things that I don't think have at least in my act the longevity of doing this 6 months from now.
Right, because it's topical. Yeah. Let me just turn the air on now. It's hot in here. Are you warm? All right, look, you know I complain about my eating all the time. Between busy schedules, my summer plans, sometimes all I have is a couple of minutes. Factor helps me eat smarter with really delicious chef-prepared meals. They're dietitian-approved. They get delivered to my door. I'm lazy. My wife is lazy. We want good meals delivered. More than 65 weekly meals for how I live and what I like to eat. I've got even more ways to fit in a real meal wherever my day takes me. And that's not necessarily how I would say it. But the bottom line is, my schedule is all over the place, and I like to eat good meals because I'm getting older and I was getting fatter. So I'm trying to eat healthier so I can pick and choose what I want. There's more variety and more meals. You can choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, which I love. Support your wellness goes. One more time, you idiot non-reading fool. Apparently they don't bring alphabet soup. Support your wellness goals. Even more GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean diet options with protein and good for you fats. For the first time, try Asian inspired meals, bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. These are delicious, delivered to your door meals. You can pick and choose what's important to you, what type of a diet that you might want to try to adhere to or come close to. For more choices to better nutrition, that's why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life. Feel the difference no matter what your routine is. Eat smart at factormeals.com/Norton50off. Use the code Norton50off. It's 50, Norton50off, to get 50% off your first box. Eat smart at factormeals.com/Norton50off. Now, that's the 50 is the number. It's NORTON50OFF. Use the code Norton50off. You get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code Norton50off at factormeals.com. 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. The offer is only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Trust me, these are delicious meals. My schedule is crazy. Try it. You're going to love it. Now, how many times have I complained about my penis? More importantly, how many times have other people complained about my penis? What is it doing? Why is it not budging? I'd have to create reasons. Oh, the economy. Oh, God, the game. Foreign policy, the war. Anything but to admit that, like, look, sometimes at this age or at any age, you just struggle. Your dick doesn't do what you want it to do. It's kind of like a tepid, it's like that thing outside the gas station that kind of lets you know that there's low prices. Your shaft flops around and it's humiliating. So why do I take a Blue Chew tablet? Because I have had great success with that little blue tablet. I pop it in, I chew it up, and it's not just a psychological advantage because I am now confident. I can feel it. I can feel the blood rushing to my dick and it plumps up. And what I'll do is a little tap test, and if it plumps up a little, I am in a perfect place right now. They want me to say the last time I took Blue Chew, my dick got sponsored by an energy drink, but that's not true. The last time I took Blue Chew, my dick was just hard, and I sat in the living room, and I invited people over, and they applauded. They're like, finally, finally. You know how nice it is? Although sometimes my wife steals my Blue Chew, but don't tell her I told you. You know, good-natured improving. But this is not a supplement. It's an erection resurrection, because any man knows there's nothing worse than when your dick doesn't work. Blue Chew gives you confidence, and Blue Chew has just given me great results. I fuck a little better. I fuck a little longer. And again, if you're a woman in bed with me, you may not want me to take a blue chew because you don't want to have to look at this face blinking at you for any length of time. I bet you women hate that I take blue chew because now I have erections and I have sex for a while. We like the old days where he would just hand us money and shove his limp dick in for 30 seconds and then roll over and apologize. But now I got blue grit on my teeth and I'm like, I'm ready to go, babe. And I give her a real deep, well, shallow dicking, but for me at least it's hard. Deep depth is, I guess, you know, only if you were born that way. We've got a special deal for my listeners. As always, you get your first month of Blue Chew free. Use the promo code Norton at checkout. You pay $5 for shipping. That's it, $5. Join Blue Chew's mission to upgrade humanity one thrust at a time. Head to Blue Chew, BLUECHEW.com for details and safety info. And a big thanks to Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. It really is a product I use. I've used it for years. My results have been great, and I love Blue Chew. So thank you, guys.
Do you hold any spits at all for a special, or do you not even think about a special?
I guess the best way to put it is there are definitely evergreen ideas that I think are timeless and that I'm focused on improving. But I think that when something is like at its best, why not put it out? Because the other problem with a special sometimes is that you know how good it is. You know what you've worked on and you know like how tight it is. And now the last aspect, which is like, it's what we do, so it's fine, but it is unfair, is that you've worked on this thing for a year, year and a half, however long, and now you're dependent on the crowd that's there in that moment to be receiving it as well as you've cooked it.
Yeah.
And that can be a little bit bothersome to me sometimes. And so my thing is, what if you remove that element by not knowing the crowd that was going to be there and not having the, you can't even put the pressure on yourself because you're like, look, here's everything that I wrote and I'm going to tape it today. And whoever shows up today, I hope that they enjoy it because this is written for them. And then you release it that way. And it also gets me out of my head of like those things that make putting a special together tense.
Yeah, you know? It is. And the cookie analogy is good, except I don't prepare it properly. I just kind of, I fuck up the ingredients and I choke. if there's anybody on the phone, we need headphones for this.
Okay.
Oh, there are cool. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
just unmuted the first one.
Okay, let Josh get his headphones on. Okay, hello, you're on.
My name's Comic Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
Brandon Belanger.
Hi, Brandon. What's up?
I never called into a call show before, so I was kind of letting you guys take the lead and ask the questions. So I guess the advice that I would like to ask for is how do I gain followers when I'm not allowed outside?
You don't need to be outside for followers. You can get followers inside.
Yeah, and you should talk about what you did wrong and then talk about being on house arrest if you're on house arrest. That people would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, the world was on house arrest for a year and a half. So a lot of people will be able to relate to you in a way that they probably wouldn't have before. And so your house arrest journey, you could make really interesting.
Yeah, and show people how you make wine in your own toilet like they do in prison, or do some prison things in the house.
All right. That's great. Do prison things in the house. All right. Well, so record it and put it on the internet.
Yep. You sound like a real expert already. Record it and put it on the internet. That's what my fucking aunt would describe social media. Record it and put it on the internet. All right. Thank you for the call. I don't know what to do when somebody calls and they go, hey, I've never called up. What do we do here now, guys? You just you speak if you have a question, if you have a comment, and we talk to you. Yes, you're on the phone. I hope that you really learned from that last caller.
Yeah, I just heard him say unmuted, so I'm assuming that's me.
It is you. You're correct.
All right. Yeah, this is Josh also.
Hi, Josh.
My name is Josh in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Hello.
So my question is, I've heard you talk about being addicted to anger and addicted to, not violence, but just like lashing out, and you get addicted to that feeling of anger just like anything else. And I've dealt with other addictions in my life, but my question is, what do you do when you feel that ramping up? Because I have the only two outcomes is either I blow my top and then I feel shitty about it afterwards, or I hold it in, and then I feel shitty later. So is there anything that you do to, like, get rid of that? Because it, you know how good it feels to just, you know, blow up on someone and scream and, you know,
yeah,
shit. But obviously that's not great. So
that's a good.
Is there anything that you have, like, any kind of tricks to do?
I mean, if I'm fighting with my wife, I'll just, like, I'll run a warm bath, and I'll put a box cutter next to it. And I'm like, if you don't stop talking, I'm gonna take myself out of the equation. That's not the healthiest way. What do you do, Josh? Are you an anger person?
I try not to be, because I think that I have an imbalance for, like, how good the yelling feels versus how bad I feel after. Do you know what I mean? Like I think for a lot of people, it's 50-50. It, like, feels really good to finally get it out and say it. And then they feel just as bad afterwards. Whereas, like, for me, I'm already, like, I don't know, yelling hurts my throat. So,
oh,
like, I don't
reward.
Even, yeah, I don't even get that amped, like, really screaming. Then after that, I just think about, because I overthink to begin with, I overthink about what I said and how that must feel. And then I think about, like, the angle of, like, having to hear it, and if they've heard it for the first time, and then it just is like a negative spiral. So I think that my anger usually gets internalized to the point where I'm gonna have an ulcer one day.
What a healthy, but that's a healthy outlook. 50-50 for me, it's 98-2. Like, it feels so good to scream, and then I feel bad about it after. But you do get, like, emotional hangovers. Look, dude, I don't know what to tell you, because anger is a hard one, and it's an addictive drug. It really is. It feels that weird chemical release your body has or whatever it is, and then you crash from it. So I would say, just what I try to do is think it through, and, like, I'm gonna feel really bad about this when I'm done. And the best thing I've learned about being in recovery was in one of the steps, they say restraint of tongue and pen, and that saved my career. Like, restraint, like not writing the email you want to write to tell some producer to go fuck himself, like not lashing out, like, unreasonably. Just shut up and sit with it for a minute, or wait until you're not angry, then, you know. But yeah, that's what I would say. Just think it through first, man, because it's very hard to do that. But I see guys that blow their, you see guys that, like, I know one guy we were talking about recently, he's a comic, and he just sabotaged himself by going after the wrong people. And I'm like, it was also unnecessary. Like, that, your big fucking mouth, you couldn't just shut up. And it was unjustifiable. So it's like, you see guys ruining their careers, and you're like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are definitely moments where when someone's, like, crashing out hard, you are kind of like, because it's also not your problem usually, it does recontextualize how you feel about every time you were about to lose it. Because you're like, how much do I look like that? You know, because whenever it is someone really having a bad reaction, like, you know, you'll get it a lot when I was coming up in Chicago with JFL auditions. Like, JFL audition was, like, the hugest deal in the world. It was never going to come around again. This was it. This is my life all in this, like, 5 minutes. This is my 8 Mile. And then, like, someone would have a great show, and they get a call back. So they're like, wow, this is really 8 Mile. I can't believe I'm 8 Miling right now. And then they would have a good callback show, and then they wouldn't get it. And the world was over for, like, a week. And I was that person, too, where I didn't get JFL my first time, and I was, like, pretty bummed out about it. But then I would also, like, keep living, and then you're like, oh, I'm really glad I didn't curse out everybody at the club like that one guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because then people would lose it, and I'm like, well, now it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy that the world is over, because now you've, like, actively burned some bridges.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being able to take the fact that, yeah, that sucks, but it's also going to be something you don't even think about a year from now.
And it's part of it, and it's unnecessarily burning bridges. Like, there's a difference between doing something principled and going, like, hey, look, I don't care what they say, and I just audition for something, and I don't get it. I mean, I get the feelings. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time I audition, I fucking, you know, it's a disaster. I'm a terrible auditioner, so I know that feeling. I'm like that fucking, what was that kid's name? That Luigi. Every time I fucking audition, that's what I want to do when I'm finished. I'm going to find the head of the network or the casting director. But it's my fault. All right, who's next? who's next on the phone? I hope that helps you with the anger. The addiction, I certainly get it.
Hi, I'm Sharvia.
Hi, Sharvia?
I guess, so for my advice, my question was mainly just, I feel like I'm in, like, a part of my life where, like, everything just feels, like, unknown or a question right now. Like, professionally, academically, everything. And I'm kind of just like, I don't know what to do, and or like deal with the feeling, I guess. So any advice on that? I just graduated college and I do have a job right now, but it's gonna end soon, so yeah, looking for thoughts, feelings.
Well, graduation from high school, from college is I don't really know much about. I dropped out of high school, so I never really had a plan. Did you plan on doing this, or did you not want to do it?
I actually went to college for design, so I really made a whole degree useless with my choices. And you still owe the loans after that.
You do,
they're
right?
They're not like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, then never mind. Like they actually want the money more.
Yeah.
Now that you don't do it and have no prospects. And so I guess my general advice is that the thing that has helped me is knowing that like a lot of good advice is like old advice. So a lot of the things that someone will tell you to do worked for them, which means it worked 20 years ago, which means it's too late now. So one of the reasons that a lot of people straight out of college feel so lost and everything is because every decade of college graduates is entering a different market and a different world than the college graduates from before. So even with parents of Gen Z kids now, I have heard some of the most insane entertainment advice from those parents because they're used to the 90s.
Right.
When it was like, oh, you just gotta show up at the corporate meeting with your binder and you gotta hand it to a guy who will hand it to a guy. And it's like, oh, that would have worked in like 92. You will be escorted out of the building now. Like, now that we do have Luigi's, no one's really trying to hear from somebody off the street, hey, I have some ideas, I'm right behind you. Like, that's not as reassuring as it used to be. Because I worked with people when I was coming up, whether it was through comedy or through writing, that got jobs cold, like Mad Men style. Like, they would just show up. There was a woman who told me about how she showed up to DC with like an entire portfolio of her art, and then like a year or two later got hired on she got hired on some like Batman offshoot thing, right? But it was just having the tenacity to get out there and everything.
Right.
So said all that to say that like especially college graduates now have been given what I think is like one of the rawest deals, because at least college for me, like when I was graduating college would have been a time, so we are talking like, you know, 10 or so years ago removed from when, like now when this person's like leaving college with a job and everything, but the job is gonna end. And for my age group, college by the numbers is a break even prospect. Like, you are going to owe so much in student loans that the type of careers you have access to and the extra money that you're supposed to get from being a college graduate is going to even out to the loan repayments.
So I guess what we're saying is, how many balloons can you swallow? How many balloons can you swallow, and are you willing to get on an international flight? Because there's no hope with college.
I think that now it's like you're going to be able to do so much better building a business on the internet that maybe your college, I don't know what you graduated in, but like there is a world where you're going to look back at this time and be like, oh, glad I got into YouTube.
Yeah, what did you graduate? What did you major in?
Oh yeah, so I actually finished my master's degree in city planning. So yeah, we're doing that right now. And then my undergrad was like environmental policy analysis and planning. And a lot of that relies on federal funding. So you know how that's going right now.
Yeah, so rather than trying to get a job or work in government, I think you should hit up the people that make The Sims. Because if you hit up people that make The Sims and let them know how good you are at city planning, they might be like, oh, we need a new template. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's a better option.
You're saying take those real life skills and figure out a way to use them online.
100%. All the real life skills you learned, figure out a way to do it online. Because I don't know about you, but I do feel like the federal government is like in a very Parks and Rec sitcom situation where it's like, every time they shut something down, they needed 10% of it. They offered all of those like FAA people to retire early, and that's a stressful job. So everybody was like, yeah, I'll leave. And then planes started going down, and they were like, well, anybody willing to come back real quick? It's like, it's been like that, but for everything, like even with the EPA, where they just said They've just released like some new fake study, whatever, that like actually carbon emissions aren't bad and neither is CO2. And this is also that the EPA regulations that are on cars can be lifted and everything. So then we're going to be, it's going to be the same black fumes that were from the 70s, but they'll be coming out of like a Kia Soul now. Right. And that thing is like why I probably wouldn't take my talents straight to government. I would try to do something else.
First of all, I hope CO2 isn't good for you. Otherwise, I've wasted money on tape and a towel and a hose. I have big plans. I have big plans and this doesn't work out. All right, well, we hope that helps you a little bit. You don't need a fancy mattress to sleep well. You just need one that works. Ghostbed is very aware. They know all about this. It's a family-owned company built by a team with over 20 years of experience. They know how to build a mattress that actually lasts. Every model is designed with cooling materials to help regulate the temperature while you sleep. One of the most important things, if you want to stay asleep all night long, I like a nice, cool mattress, and Ghostbed is fantastic. They also feature their exclusive ProCore layer. Gives your body a little added support where it needs it most, under your hips and back, which can really help with back pain. My back is always in trouble, so this helps me a lot. Another reason I love Ghostbed, all the mattresses are competitively priced, up to 50% less than comparable brands. Jim, you idiot. The outstanding mattress made with premium materials. It's not going to break your bank. And it's cooling. What's not to love? Head to Ghostbed. Take their online mattress quiz. Get your personalized recommendations from the Ghostbed collection. It's based on how you sleep. And for a limited time, our listeners can take an extra 25% off. Go to ghostbed.com/Norton. Use the promo code Norton at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/Norton. Promo code Norton. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, makers of the coolest beds in the world, not to mention the scariest. It is got to be weird to not know, because I knew what I wanted to do when I was 18. Like I think I was 21 when I started, so I kind of knew this is it. There's no net. I have no skills other than this. But it's got to suck to owe the however many hundreds of thousands of dollars. How much did you owe in college? Did you owe more than 100 grand?
No. Okay, I think I owed 43 or 44. So it's like, you know, it's terrible. And if you make the minimum payment for long enough, you will owe 100 right. eventually. But I also think I lucked out because at least two of my loans weren't as predatory as the ones my friends had. So I had two loans that were very small. And like I said, that's why I did the wrong thing, because I tried to pay the biggest one off for, I think you're supposed to pay the one off that has the like highest interest rate or something like that first. Get rid of that one. So it isn't really about the number. It's more about the interest rate. But anyway, like I think I had a total of 7 or 8 loans over the course of my like college career, because I was taking out, I think, 2 each year with different scholarship and like other money. And so they were all for different amounts as well. So Yeah. I think that what we've done now with like the student loan thing is it's gonna lead to like the biggest brain dump we've ever had. Like we're gonna have like the type of brain dumps that like fascist countries have, but it'll just be because someone who's smart enough to be like, oh, I don't want to owe $60,000 from reading.
Right.
I could read for free. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like when you really look at like how screwed people are, you're like, oh, this was all from learning. It actually pays more to be dumb. Like, just don't even try and you will have more money. Even your net zero will be worth more. The $2 you have in your pocket are $2 that aren't in debt.
That's right. You don't owe anybody.
Yeah.
Forget it. Yes.
Or you could be a doctor and owe $145,000 and make the minimum payment while you're in your, you know, first few years of your practice, because you can't afford to do anything else. You're trying to build a client list and everything. Maybe you're not in people's network for insurance. And so now you owe $200,000 after giving them some money.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
Don't you think people are paying for their network of friends? I always heard that growing up.
I don't know if that's true, because I think every year people get less and less social.
Yeah.
So it's like I feel like that may still be the case at like some Ivy League and some like legacy type universities. I don't know if that's the case because of how people meet now as well. Because paying for your network made sense before there was a internet network of people to meet up with. But now you could just randomly you know from going on the road. It's like you will book a hotel room. You'll be like, why is this room so expensive this year? Like, I've been here before. It was never triple this price. And then it turns out there's like a dentist comp. You're accidentally at a dentist conference just from doing like the Yuckles in Indiana.
With a bunch of guys who are eventually going to blow their brains out. That is a miserable group of people.
Yeah. So so it's like you could go to like the finest dental institution in the U.S. to make friends with all the best dentists who are working on new technology for the mouth. Or you could go to a conference and like meet those same people anyway and probably become faster friends because now you don't have to worry about like getting a, like there are probably so many more strong networks you can build when you all aren't trying to hook up with the same person.
Yeah. My dear friend Jeff used to do that. He'd have people over. We would all go over to his house. what a networker. I met the Clintons. I met Bill Gates. What a networker. What was one of the first things you did when you got money? Like, are you responsible with it? Like, did you pay something off? Like, when you start getting good checks, did you buy yourself an apartment or a car, or did you pay your debt down?
The first thing I ever did with any chunk of money was pay off my student loans. But that money wasn't like, it wasn't in that way. It wasn't the chunk. It was like at the end of the year, I looked at it and I was like, okay, I could either like try to start investing some of this or save it, but I'll still owe the money. I'll just be in more debt. So let me just like, I basically responsibly broke myself again because it was all off of like colleges. Because the first year I did NACA, I booked all these colleges. And so then I booked so many colleges that I was able to pay off my loans. But then once I paid my taxes, I was broke again.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was
still at like Trader Joe's as well. So it wasn't like,
working at Trader Joe's?
Yeah, I was working at Trader Joe's. And like, it actually blew my mind how like, that was my first, I'm glad that was my first experience with having any money and losing it in that way. Because I was like clocking in at Trader Joe's knowing that I had finally had a chunk of money, more money than I had ever had in my life, but then I had to lose it to like this responsible thing of student loans, taxes, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So now I'm finally making money because even though I don't have money, every dollar I have is like a dollar that's not in debt or whatever. But I was like, oh, I see how people snap now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even get to ball out. I didn't do anything. And so then the next time I had any money, I like got my mom's house.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So like paid for my mom's house and everything. And so that was like a nice feeling.
That's a very nice young man thing to do. I sent my parents money, but they wouldn't let me buy their house. I was glad. I'm like, I want to get you guys a house. Like, we don't want one. I'm like, all right, forget it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to do something responsible with. At least if you break yourself, you're like, all right, well, at least I did something responsible. At least you just
feel good about something that you did.
You didn't buy Coke. It wasn't like you went on a bender. Do you party? Was it 1987? What a fucking old man. Do you toke? Oh, do you get high?
No.
Okay. Because I'm saying there's a lot. I just realized as I asked that. I'm sober a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just such an old man way. Do you party?
Yeah. Are
we in a rest area? Why would I ask?
Yeah.
But I see a lot of guys, there's so much, when you start making money, the more you can spend on unhealthy stuff too.
Sure. But I'm also like, because I don't even know if I'm fun, I don't know if I would ever know how to spend money in a way that was like truly destructive. I'm very lucky that all the stuff I like is cheap.
Right, and not crazy, not like stuff that's going to ruin your life.
No, it's like the most you'll really drop is like maybe if it's like limited edition classic, like $150 on like a Superman omnibus or something like that, like a really classic, you know, thick version of.
You're picking
like,
comic books.
Yeah, but I'm also that's the other thing. It's like I can't even ball out because I'm also picky. So then there's only certain artists I like, only certain writers. And so it's like, I'm never going to just spend a grand at Forbidden Planet on Batman comics. It's like maybe going to be like at the most like 150 with, like, you know, buying several of one author that I really like.
So you, let me just turn that thing off because I can hear it. But
now that you have more money in your life, do you feel like whatever ideas you had about rich people has changed?
No, okay. Not really, because it's a lot like, I think that getting money in any form, whatever amount, like whether you win the lottery or whether you just go from making like 50K a year to 100K a year, I think if you look at it this particular way, so I'm not saying everyone has to, but I look at it the way that I look at like losing your virginity or something like that.
Yes.
Where it's like, it's
my
like,
face was in a pillow.
Where it's like, there is every idea you had before it, and then there's every thing you know now that you have done it.
Now that you've experienced it, you know what it feels like, you know what it, yes.
And so if anything, now, just like with like losing your virginity or like finally becoming like in any way sexually active, it does kind of now recontextualize some of the things you thought about people, but not necessarily in a way that changes your mind. I remember thinking to myself like, oh, so that dude was a bad person. This was good, but it wasn't worth all that, or you know what I mean? And so with money and rich people, I think that one thing that it opened my mind up to is the mentality that like Americans don't accept that comfortable is rich. Like if you say you're comfortable, that's a longer way of saying that you're rich, because most of the world is uncomfortable. So by the metric of like how people live in the entirety of the world, already if you make more than like $10 a week, you're actually doing pretty good. Now, we know that in the US you can't live off of that.
Right.
But now people who make like $350,000 a year, talking about living paycheck to paycheck, a lot of people scoff at that. But the thing is, it's like depending on where you are and depending on what sort of like life you envision as a rich or comfortable life puts you in that place. So it's not to say that they aren't being a little bit delusional, but at the same time, once you do the math, like the math sort of gives everything away. And I think that if you are, let's say someone's making $500,000 a year, it's like, okay, but if the math with you taking care of your spouse and three kids or whatever pans out to you not having any money after taxes, then that just is what it is.
Doesn't matter what you make. That's the beauty of living with we like to call a funnel in the next room. No matter how much you make, it's all going to get whittled down because somebody can spend any amount. And now that you're doing really well, you sell tickets, you add, like you're really blown, like you're doing very well on The Daily Show. Are you a date one person at a time person, or do you like just keep yourself open?
No. I mean, I've been with my girlfriend for years.
Oh, you're the same. Okay, same girlfriend for a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of the smart way to do it, because you know you're gonna wind up. There's a lot of crazies. Which again, I sound like my aunt saying that, but I know because I've slept with half of them. There's a lot of kooks out there, so you're better off just being with the one person.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like I don't know how people, I think whenever things change in a way, no matter how you try to stay the same, people around you might change, or circumstances just demand different changes from people. And so I think that, I don't know, when I see someone who's like properly wildly famous and they're trying to date people, then there do seem to be a lot of pitfalls that a person couldn't even see coming. You know what I mean? Like I've had friends who are pretty famous trying to just date cold.
Yeah.
And there is a thing of like, oh, yeah, I could see that being a nightmare. It's already rough trying to put yourself out there. But then trying to put yourself out there when you don't know if there's ulterior motives. And you also don't know, like, There's a level of integrity that I don't think a lot of people have anymore, which I feel sad to say. But whether it's friendship or it's dating, it's like all the trust can't go out the window just because something ends. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yes.
And I think for a lot of people it does. So I think a lot of people would date like a rich person or a famous person, especially someone who is newly those things. And then if it goes bad, then they'll run and tell the world of, and whether that's out of anger or just out of like, well, I don't owe you anything anymore, we don't speak anymore. I think that there's a lot of that going on that I think would also make a person very fearful to date now. And there's also weird, online is like a different world as far as what it's done to dating, you know what I mean?
I never mind, like, you know, now I get married, but I never minded if somebody, like, you want them to like you, but I never minded if they had, like, a little bit of ulterior motives, because that would make up for a lot of the obvious flaws. Like, you know, I can't expect somebody just on an integrity based, some woman's going to look at my fucking stomach and tits and blinking and go, yeah, I'm a 9, that's who I want to hook up with, you know what I mean? I needed something to balance the scales a little bit, you know, something to take me from a 5 to a 9, and it's money, so I didn't mind it. But if it's someone's using you, that's different. But I didn't mind something that got me in the front door, that might not have gotten into the front door if I didn't have it. But, you know, after a while, you kind of see if that's all there is, then it's no good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now I'm kind of basically just, you know, just saying I don't mind being used, but that's not what I'm saying. I don't want to be used.
Yeah.
I have been, but I'm, you know, I use them too. Who's on the phone?
Okay, so my thing is, so I am a 26-year-old woman, and I just never dated, like, as a teenager or before, but now I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, how to talk to guys in my age group, and I think I'm too old to not have any game, and I just didn't know if some men could give me some advice.
Huh. And how old did you say you were?
I'm 26.
You know, sometimes texting makes things a little smoother. Like, you can get to know someone a little bit more through text. I don't know if that makes it more awkward when you're actually in person. But I would say be honest about not having game. Don't try to have it if you don't have it. I would say just you got to be yourself, because it will fall apart if you're not.
Yeah, I mean, before I give any advice, are you on any apps?
No, I was trying to in person. Like, I would go to, like, I went to like my friend's bachelorette, and I was in a club, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And then I was like, thought I was making eye contact with a guy, like, across the dance floor, but then people moved, and he was dancing with another guy. So I was like, well, I misread the situation. So that's not
yes.
what worked for me.
Yeah, you never think about that in the moment, how, like, you know in, like, every movie where there's that scene where somebody's able to, like, really get some room on the dance floor and like, have a real moment. You never think about who they're looking at just as a point of reference, you know what I mean? Just so they don't get dizzy. But yeah, I would say it is very okay to not have game, because most people don't, whether they know it or not. The same thing with being charismatic or being like a leader is up there with having game. Like, very few people, even people in those positions, rarely possess those qualities, and they are normally in those positions by, like, happenstance, you know? And so rather than, like, just like Jim said, rather than, like, a sort of fake it till you make it, I think that you approaching already is, like, a pretty powerful thing.
Yes.
It's crazy. If anything, you should not take to heart that when you approach, there are going to be people who don't know what to do, because that is, like, at 26, it's like you're a little bit older than the last generation of people who will probably, like, Gen Alpha, like, those kids now.
Is that what they're called?
I think that's what they're called. But, like, the people who are children now, the leaders among them will be the people who can just maintain eye contact. I think if you can, if you are able to walk up and look someone in the eye, I think eventually they'll be like, I think I just have to do what they say. Like, they're looking into my head. And I think that, right, like, being Gen Z and everything, it's like you're right at that cusp where there are plenty of people who, whether it's that COVID botched their entire college experience or botched their, like, early adult life experience, there's still people that are recovering as best as possible from having their entire life derailed. And so I would give yourself a ton of grace and just know that, like, it's gonna be, if I don't know if you're approaching like men or women, but I know for men especially, if a woman walks up to you and is actually hitting on you, there is a part of you that's like, so this is like an elaborate mugging.
Yeah, this is going like, to go south somehow.
Like,
yeah.
somebody behind me with a pipe right now, right? She's just distracting me from the front. Like, she's keeping me looking in this direction, but like my wallet's about to get got. And so I think that if you're approaching men especially, you're going to have to deal with the lag time on the brain of someone being like, wow, this is actually happening.
Yeah, and it's real. And also with the eye contact, that's a great point. Eye contact, but don't maintain it too long. Like, you don't want to walk up like laser eye contact and then not release it, because that's also uncomfortable. Someone that looks in your eyes too long,
yeah,
is psychotic.
Yeah.
But it seems like a whole generation of people who, again, operates online, the eye contact, a lot of that is difficult because they're not used to being in the room with people.
And it's difficult, but it's still one of the most like reassuring, intimate things that you can do with a person. Like, people, no matter what the internet does or whatever, like dating gurus out there poisoning the well, there's still all of the normal things that turn people on still like are effective and turn people on. Like you're still very much a human that wants to engage with people, and as long as you are doing that, you will find success sooner or later. Just be ready for a man to be like, so when is the pipe coming?
Yeah, what is this? Or yeah. Look for cameras thinking that he's being fucking pranked
with, yeah,
some reality show.
Yeah. I had a friend botch an approach because of that. He was so certain that this woman was like making fun of him that he was like, yeah, but like, when is it? Like, it was, she approaches him on the street, and he's one of those dudes that, like, you know, he's like tall and won't accept that he's good looking because he's like, look awkward and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, this woman walked up to you and is like hitting on you, but he's like looking around like, over there, guy with the newspaper. Who is it?
Yeah. Who's fucking with me? Who's filming this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You always look for a mic on them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're stupid enough to put one of those road mics with the light on it on their,
yeah,
chest.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you meet your girlfriend?
We almost met at a show, and then we matched on Tinder like 2 weeks later or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did so bad on Tinder.
Really?
Oh, what a miserable endeavor that was.
Really?
Yeah. I think on Hinge I met two, but then I said the wrong thing about, like, she was a vegan, and I said, do you eat fish? And then she just ghosted me. So I asked the wrong question. I did Raya. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that painful reminder. I don't belong on Raya. It's from models and celebrities. And I was going to, you know, Maria Menounos. I was going to a party at her house because my old co-host Sam is very close to her and Kevin. And we were going to a party, and she said she would come, and she just completely ghosted me. Yeah, that one really hurt. I was going to a semi-celebrity party, and I got ghosted. It really hurt. But I appreciate you bringing that up after I had finally washed it away. All right, is anybody on the phone? So far, we've had nice callers. They've been very, maybe it's you, Josh. There's usually no women call this show. We got a couple already. It's good. It's a nice energy.
Hi, I'm alive at the moment. How are you?
Good. I like, that's a lot of pressure. You said at the moment. We better not fuck this call up. What's your name?
Oh, I'm about to F this call up. I'm about to F up your whole lives, my friends. My name is Tiffany.
Hi, Tiffany.
Hi. Okay, no, but seriously, I've pretty much lost all will to live. I'm going to TLDR this because it's very deep and heavy, and this is not the context for all of that, but I've had a very, very difficult life. I don't have parents. I don't have partners. I don't have kids. I don't have family. I lost my job several years ago, my 20-year fucking career. I haven't been able to find another job, and I'm about to lose my housing again. I've lost my dreams. I've lost my goals. I'm tired of existing. And quite frankly, the primary reason why I called in is because I love you guys. Like, comedy is like the one thing that's keeping me going. So just talking to you guys is like, mwah, it's chef's kiss for me right now. So anything you guys say is going to be super awesome for me. But yeah, like if you guys have any kind of advice for someone, a perpetual sad bitch, I would love to hear it.
I could say that as a person who has been very suicidal in my life and very depressed and has attempted it once for real. And I'm very grateful I survived it. Like, you know, with the old saying, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. You know, you're going to die anyway. There's no need to hurry the process up. You know what I mean? We're here for a very short period of time. Obviously, my big suggestion is don't do it. And don't let those tapes play, because suicidal ideation is almost this weird comfort. You know, the way I wrote about it, where it's like the, in case of emergency, break glass. Knowing that it's there is somehow a comfort, because it feels like a solution when I'm powerless over things. It's there waiting for me. Whew, I got that. Like, it's almost like I'm not helpless. I'm not hopeless. I can just kill myself someday. But the more you get wrapped up in that, the more it becomes like a real and viable option. And it really is. All it's doing is stopping you from progressing in a healthy way. You got to get rid of that comfortable thought and realize it's a lie. It's a fucking lie. It's not the solution you're looking for. It's a fake sense of comfort, if that makes sense.
It actually does. And what you said just now, oh my God, the fact that it is the comfort, the fact that like it's been so hard for me for my whole ass life, that just that out, it's like the one thing that gives me comfort. So you saying it like almost exactly the way I think it is like really beautiful to hear. I am definitely not alone. Thank you.
I mean, yeah. I also am curious on your end. Like, I don't know in all the ways, all the things that you have lost, but is there anything that you specifically want next for yourself or want next in life? Like, obviously you've been mentioning trying to get a job and struggling with that, but is there a thing that sticks out to you that is the next thing that you want?
If I had that, I wouldn't want a KMS. You know what I mean? Like, I've done everything I've tried everything that I feel like I could do in my life, even currently. Like, so my career is like, I'm a software developer, right? And a few years ago, the entire industry just shat itself. All right. I'm not like this hyper talented, wonderful developer who could just like that memorizes all the syntax for like 18 different languages, knows all of the stacks for like everything ever. So it's really hard for me to compete with all of these people from like Google and Meta who are now also jobless from all of these firings that have been happening. So I'm like in this spot where it's like, shit, I cannot compete. I have 20 years in my fucking career. So where am I going to pivot? The only thing that I'm actually kind of good at, which you guys might find to be kind of lame, but I am kind of a decent performance artist. Like, I've done that professionally sometimes a little bit, but because you guys know how it is, I decided to go for something that I thought was going to be more stable, which was software development. Well, fuck me in the A. It was definitely not. It's kind of worse now. So I'm like in this space where it's like, what do I even have to live for? What dream do I even have? Everything that I wanted to do just shat itself. And I'm a Hispanic woman, and I live in the United States of America, and it's ass for people like me right now. So now I have like even less of a will to continue just in this whole ass existence. So it's like,
but if you let me interrupt, Jeff. Just a question for you: do you go to therapy? Because sometimes therapy helps too, to have somebody to talk to. It's not like a be all end all. But sometimes having a person to be accountable with your feelings for every week does kind of help. Have you talked to anybody?
Oh, so yes, but also no. So I lost my last therapist because my therapist said that my issues are like too much for them, that I needed to find a higher level of care. And guess what? I haven't been able to find a higher level of care. And this is like several therapists in a row that when I've like actually like laid down the details that y'all don't know, they've been like, whoa, bitch, this is too much for me. I am not qualified for you. Go to someone else. and then no
That's
one
That's a funny opening line for a book. That's a great opening line for a book.
Yeah,
do
yeah.
Do you write this stuff down? Like, if you have such an interesting life, like a lot of times there's a lot of pain, you should write it down. And even if you don't do anything with it, either put a blog or do something where it's like vomiting. Writing is sometimes like vomiting when it's all these negative feelings, but people will really relate to you more than you think. Because you have that artistic thing inside of you. Like, why not start writing stuff down? And whether or not you put it up is up to you, but why don't you start writing it down?
That's an excellent idea. I'll be frank. I've been afraid of my thoughts, so I haven't written it down because I know how dark it could get. But I'm going to be candid. Listening to you guys, whom I respect and listen to all the time, tell me that maybe I should be doing that is something that I'm actually going to start doing. So thank you for like kind of helping me not be so afraid of my thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, when you write things down, you see how they actually come off to you. There's something to be said for like the same way that like every once in a while you'll like write a bit and you'll be like, this is about to kill him. This is it. And then you say it and then everyone's looking at you and you're like, oh no. Oh, geez. All right. That didn't sound the way I thought it sounded at all. And it's like the same way that sometimes we think our thoughts are funnier than they are. Sometimes you might think that your thoughts are darker than they are, or have more of a spiral than they do, or are more inescapable than they actually are. So then writing it down, I find that when I write something down, I have less energy for that specific thought, because like it's why they tell you to like write a letter to your ex and don't send it or whatever, because it's like the letter is so mean. It's so ridiculously mean. And then like you may even read it after you wrote it and be like, whew. You know what I mean? Like I found a journal. I found a journal that I had from when I was a little kid, just to show you that like writing things down changes like perspective and stuff like that. I wrote down so much stuff when I was a kid, and I think that's why I write a lot now. And reading it back, I was like, Oh, I'm glad I have this to burn. I'm glad that no one will ever see this. Man, I think one of the only reasons I'm not like, you know, in the same boat as other people is I was born early enough that these could never be tweets. Yes. Do you know what I mean? It's like I wrote down all these like angry thoughts, and I'm just like this kid that's like, and I'm not doing it for the performance of anybody. I'm not trying to be an edgelord or anything. I genuinely felt this stuff, and I didn't want to put it out into the world. So I was like, the best way to not internalize it is to like at least write it down. Then when I read it back, I was like, man, no wonder it took you so long to get a girlfriend. Jeez.
Yeah, it was simmering.
Yeah. And so I think if you write down a lot of what you're thinking and feeling, that's gonna I'm not saying it's gonna fix everything, but I do think it's gonna pivot you to a better direction.
Yeah, I agree. You should just write it down. And again, it's writing it down. Sometimes, like if it's just sitting in your head, it airs it out. Sometimes these things are the worst when we don't air them out, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. You know what? I called in just wanting to talk to you guys because I love you guys. I wasn't expecting any like actual advice that could actually help. But you know what? This is actual advice that could actually help. Thank you.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Call back the show. I tape. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see that we just pop up and tape. But call back. Let us know how you're doing, you know, in the weeks to come. But hang in there, okay? It will improve. You're not going to feel like this forever. Did you hang up?
I just went to another
call. Okay.
I thought you said bye.
Oh, okay. Well, Mike is cold. All right. Take care. Yeah. Come on. Mike doesn't play. And I feel kind of better. Yeah. Come on. All right. Hello. You're on the phone. How are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, what's going on in the background?
I'm in a restaurant.
Oh, you're in a restaurant? Because it sounds like you're calling from a Western.
Yeah, sir, this is very distracting, so why don't you order your omelet or whatever it is you want and then call us back. Yeah, sorry, we gotta cut our losses here. The guy's in a restaurant. All right.
It sounded like a mix between the whistle from The Quick and the Dead and the song Home by like James
hey,
and Magnetic Zeros. You ever heard that song?
No.
Oh, home, won't you come home?
How's it going?
Home is when I'm alone with you. And then it also had the whistle of like a wow, wow,
Wow.
Yeah, it was very Sergio Leone, very fucking spaghetti western.
Yeah.
Yes, you're on the phone, whoever this is.
Doing good. Love the last special. I just want to say that real quick.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, the question I had was basically, like, I became a truck driver, and I moved to, like, Los Angeles, and I kind of lost all my friends. And so it's just me and my wife, and all we do is talk, so she kind of became, like, you know, my friend also. Unfortunately, I feel like sometimes I say stuff to her I should probably only say to my friends.
Yeah.
Like, dirty shit or, like, shit about another girl.
Yeah.
And that pisses her off, so I'm just like, I don't know. I'm never home, so it's hard to make friends. I'm just, like, wondering, how do I find an outlet for that stuff when I never really have the chance to, I guess, just bullshit with guys anymore, so, you know, without fucking up my relationship, I guess, you know?
I mean, we use common sense. You know what I mean? You know how many times I've been out with my wife and I've wanted to blurt out, God, I'd love to fuck her? And I don't. You can't say that stuff when you're with somebody. You have to just think it.
Yeah,
I would say that. Just common sense. True. I mean, have you ever slipped?
I don't know. You'd have to ask my girlfriend if I've slipped, because I don't know if I slipped. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the wrong person to know if I said a dumb thing in front of her. She'd be the one to react to it. But I think that as far as making friends to have those conversations with, because you've identified the problem, which I think is rare sometimes. I think that there are actually a ton of dudes in your situation where, like, their girlfriend or wife has become their best friend in a way that's, like, not sustainable.
Yeah.
Because now there's no, like, male energy to, like, have those conversations with and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, as much as sometimes I go against it, I think that in your specific case, especially not being home and being able to have hangs and stuff like that, I think that online is going to be where you make friends with other guys that kind of either get what you're going through or can hop on the phone. Like, you know, you're driving a truck and I imagine you have some time to talk. Like, you have to obviously pay attention to the road and everything. But, like, as far as conversation goes, you know, I think that there are plenty of guys out there that are, you know, looking for a friend, and they're in your exact situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you use social, but, like, I think really leaning on people that you even meet over social, it's like you're a grown man, so you don't have to necessarily worry about the same predators that, you know what I mean? Like, normally I don't say try to make as many friends as you can online. As many faceless and nameless friends as you can. But, you know, you already sound just, I can tell from the bass of your voice that you could probably handle yourself if they turned out to be a weirder guy than you, that you were bargaining for.
It would be funny, though, if you just go on Instagram and you're like, hey, I'm in a truck stop, a rest area. I'm looking for another man just to sit and talk about girls with.
Like, I got some friends back home, and I call them up, but I think at some point they start getting annoyed because I think guys don't want to be on the phone for extended periods of time. And I'm,
you're right,
you know, a lonely trucker. So I'm just like, you know, burning a hole in their ear, just talking their ear off. So, like,
yeah.
That's why you got to break it up over multiple dudes.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Not don't burden just one friend.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to look, if you spread the burden, I've had to do this myself. Spreading the burden amongst, like, four or five friends, now it's no burden at all.
That's
like,
right.
And then the fact that you're getting off the phone first, they're like, oh, I wanted to talk more, but okay.
Yeah, just one of your meth-fueled rants when you're doing 115 down the fucking Route 80. Call a couple of different people. Don't just call one guy. All right, buddy, hang in there. Stop saying stuff to your wife that you shouldn't. Is he gone?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I should say goodbye because you just, let's see, we'll wrap this up. Oh, wow. We'll wrap this up in a second. Okay, maybe we'll do one more call. But it is funny how abrupt Mike is with the goodbyes.
It reminds me of, like, you ever see Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt? Remember when they're, like, saying bye to each other and then that other lady, like, kills the power to the elevator?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, basically, she, like, Angelina Jolie has Brad Pitt trapped in the elevator, and she's like, well, looks like you're trapped. I'm about to drop the elevator. And she's not the actual one that has the button. And so then she's like, well, goodbye. And he's like, well, goodbye. And then the other lady presses the button, and then she turns the lady. She's like, what the hell was that? And she was like, you said goodbye. And then it turns out he wasn't in the elevator.
Sorry, Jim. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, I'm good. I love it. And by the way, I'm talking about Brad and Angelina. I just love, we all know how that worked out. They meet on the set, the hottest couple. And even two of the best looking, mm-hmm. talented. I mean, they're both household names.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't end it nicely. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. You know what I mean? Some relationships don't end well. Mm-hmm. They implode. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to one more call. Yes, you're
What's
on the...
What's up, fellas? Josh, congratulations on all the recent success. We saw you on The Daily Show this last week. You killed it.
Oh, thanks.
I'll be at the Flowers Show in West Palm Beach coming in November. Jim, I was just checking your tour dates. You got to get down to Florida sometime soon so I can check out your latest stuff.
Yeah, I've done like 5 Florida dates in the last 6 months, but welcome to the show. thanks a lot for not paying attention. I was in...
Oh, my bad, Jim.
Yeah, you missed it. That's all right. What's up, buddy?
All right, awesome. I really appreciate the opportunity here. So I've been in comedy for about 9 months now. I'm doing it more for exploration and it's just fun. And one of the things that I'm doing just constantly is writing. But Josh, all your writing is very heavy into irony and the build up and coming up with particular perspectives that kind of subvert expectations. And my question for you is over your career, do you have certain like prompts or questions that you ask yourself to kind of tease out like the best like angles when it comes to a topic that is within the zeitgeist?
It's mostly just how I feel about the thing. I end up having a lot of feelings about just stuff happening in general. Like a good example is I didn't do a set on the Sydney Sweeney thing, but there are so many layers to it.
Yeah.
There's like a crazy amount of layers because what really like even from so as an example, right? If I was going to write something about the Sydney Sweeney thing, and maybe this is too much to give away because I may still do it, but the Sydney Sweeney American Eagle ad had people in uproar because they're like, oh, this is like eugenics, this is like a Nazi dog whistle, all this stuff, right? But then when you go back to the, I think it was the Brooke Shields American Eagle ad also, like it's almost like it's half them doing a wink wink and then it's half them doing an older ad at the same time. And so with Brooke Shields, that ad to me was very funny because it still kind of had that like eugenics-y talk of like traits being passed down and stuff like that. But in that thing, Brooke Shields is like trying to put on the pants, which is objectively funny because even though it's like I found it a little weird because she was like 15 at the time, so it's a little weird to like have, you know, this kid be putting on these pants, but she's supposed to be sexy. It was uncomfortable, but the thing that's funny to me is like imagine trying to do a Nazi dog whistle and put on pants at the same time and you can't get them on because they're tight. So now you're like wriggling on the floor like sick, like you're like, and it's like that thing. So it's like how I actually feel about it versus what's happening, because then you had the extra layers come out of like Sydney Sweeney being a registered Republican and a registered Republican in Florida and a Florida Republican. Now you're talking about a Florida Republican versus like any other type of Republican and like how Republican is that? So now you have jokes about being Republican squared, and then you have so many different places you can go with everything if you think about it long enough. And I've spent enough time alone that's what I do with ideas, is think about them way too much.
That's a much better answer than I would have given. I had one line for Sydney Sweeney. I don't care about her politics. I'd sleep with her if she was an ISIS recruiter. That was all I came up with. And that was the beginning, middle, and end of my Sydney Sweeney hunk. But I think what Josh is talking about is really exploring an idea and a thought. And that's what you should do with anything, right? You just walk through it, see how you feel about it. And importantly, too, what do I want to say about it? Like, mm-hmm. Do I want to have a certain angle? Do I want to make my real opinion clear? Do I not? Sometimes it just happens naturally.
Do you guys both have when you're coming up with something and you're like, oh wow, this seems funny, do you know what your truth is? Because it's all shades of gray, really. Like, do you ever figure that out? How do you go about like figuring out what like the match to the truth of what you have is versus what actually is funny?
I think beef.
Is that just kind of going up on stage and then just kind of seeing how it lands?
I think sometimes you're obligated to tell the truth. Other times you're not. Like, you're obligated just to be original and funny. If you want to be truthful, you can. But there's no obligation to it. You can be. Mm. I mean, you know, like, you know, Rodney was a great comic. Mm-hmm. Jerome Rivers was a great comic, and they weren't always being truthful. You're not obligated, as long as you're not building your whole reputation on a lie. Like, you know what I mean? As long as you're not saying, you know what I mean? Oh my God, I was born in Beirut, you know, and you weren't. You were born in Jersey. Like, then you're kind of your foundation is you're a fraud. But I don't think you're obligated to tell the truth every time you do a joke. If the funny part is in the lie or the exaggeration, then, you know, as long as it's original.
Yeah, so it's rooted in some truth that you have, but then from there you have, like, the poetic license to be able to go and expand from there and make it silly or absurd if you want
why
to.
Not? Whatever makes you feel good. Whatever is original and funny and
That's
unique
awesome.
To you.
Dude, I really appreciate the opportunity, guys.
All right,
good luck to you both.
Yeah, you too.
Josh, I appreciate you being here. I really love your stuff, man. It's really great what you're doing. Honestly, I'm happy for you that you're succeeding. And they can catch. Are you on every week on the Daily Show, or does the schedule fluctuate?
Schedule fluctuates, and I'd say it's most weeks. But yeah, it goes back and forth.
Do you like hosting it when you hosted it?
It was a good time. Yeah, and I was very thankful to everybody. Everybody was super supportive, and like everybody on staff, and then even the viewers were like very open to me hosting and enjoyed the shows and stuff. So I was very thankful. I would not have asked for a better first week doing it, and I look forward to doing it in the future.
Yeah, and if you see Josh on the road, just, you know, brilliant and prolific guy, always funny, new stuff. And I used to see every night. I don't see anymore. I don't blame you. I'd be in theaters too if I could avoid the Cellar on a Tuesday. I would do what you're doing. But it's always funny stuff, and
thanks,
it's always
man.
New. So thanks for coming on, man. It was great having you, and I'm sure I'll be seeing more of you.
Appreciate you.
All right.
Thank you so much for calling my show. The episode's over, it's time to go. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. I hope everything works out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.